Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome to Stacking Giants. Hi, Tom Allen. He's Mr. Mail Order. SP Futures up 375. Dow Futures up 8. NASDAQ Futures up 15. They were up most of the day yesterday. We were rallying under the close pretty good, especially on the NASDAQ. Then right after the close, while the futures were still trading, Amazon's earnings came out. Amazon was down $116 on the close. We'll get numbers this morning here in a second, or in a minute. And kind of took everything down to where the S&P's closed about flat. Now they're up a little bit this morning. NASDAQ was fairly strong, though. Microsoft was strong. A few of those stocks were strong yesterday. But then Amazon with a clunk. Kevin, how are you? Clunk, clunk.
Good. So what, Amazon's down to what, about $1 million a share now?
They topped out at like 2,100. So they're down 1,600. I mean, they're a ways from the tippy top, unlike a lot of other stocks that are at their top. There's a lot of stacks that are
not. I'll have to do a little reading and see what the industry is saying about, I mean, I'm talking about, not necessarily the stock analysts, but what the retail industry is saying, because, they've taken on some competitors lately. Walmart being one of them, but there are others as well. A lot of the retailers are really, but between getting into the ability to either pick up or get delivery when you order online, and then some of them just being big like Walmart, it may be that the there's a little erosion in their market share.
I would come at it a slightly different way, not different. In addition to the. When you wander down this road, there's something called the you ever take the graduate marketing course? There's an old line from way the hell back called the Wheel of Retailing. And when the Kevin and the Chief start out with a wine store, we're just going to put the boxes on the floor. That's all we're going to do. We're going to have the discount wines, and that's it. And finally, after 2 years, we're doing pretty good. And we said, man, this place would sure look a whole lot better if you guys bought some racks. So we buy some racks, and then maybe we deliver it, and maybe we have two cashiers, or we bag it for you. And all of a sudden, we're creeping up a little bit on the cost, and sure enough, Matty Weber and one of his scoundrels open up one down the block that's the original stuff on the floor again. And it's called, everybody moves up in their stuff, and you get into areas that you start paying for things just to make things nicer. And I think what Amazon did, if you ask me, when they started out, they had a massive advantage with the taxes, and still do, which I still to this day, I'm not going to go into it. I've done it a million times. I think that basically sucks, but that was their huge advantage. Plus, sort of like eBay.
It was part of it anyway.
Yeah.
It was part of it. Part of it was that they're essentially the, they had a business model that really worked, too.
It wasn't all that much different than eBay's.
It wasn't radically different from eBay's. However, they did sort of, eBay never represented at all that it was the seller. Amazon wasn't overtly representing it, but Amazon was the seller. And Amazon, frankly, had much better customer service standards than eBay ever did.
Well, it's actually somewhat of a cross between eBay and Warshawski's. But what I'm saying is very, very successful. The idea is if you had a system that you put together where you or I or Maddie or the listeners can go on there and buy you know, a fender from a guy in South Dakota, have the thing delivered in 2 days, and have it at a regular price. It was Sears catalog, Warshawski's, and eBay all wrapped into one. Done a very good job. But now think of the
although there wasn't that much, you know, it delivering in 2 days at that point.
Right. But okay, so now you've got, what is your profit margin, your variable cost, I mean the fixed cost for putting together a system like that, and the people and putting it all together is probably enormous. All right. But once you're together, I'm gonna say the variable cost, using cost accounting terms here, Oprah knows the hell I'm talking about, of that particular trade from South Dakota for the fender or somebody's Jeep, or whatever it is, whatever it could be, a camera, you name it. The variable cost is what? 0.1 cent? Once the thing's already set up?
You started into a positive cash flow pretty quickly.
Yeah, so the people send the stuff in, and how do you basically bleep it up? Once you're there, the question is getting better and better, more and more industries you want to take on. Prescription drug people, you know, they're going to be scared bleepless, right? Because, of course, there's a massive markup on that stuff at some level, depending on, well, I'm not going to go into that. But now all of a sudden you say, we're going to do same-day delivery of, like, groceries. We're going to have our own fulfillment facilities. Well, we've seen how many different grocery delivery groups go out of business. Obviously, your return there is not infinite, like selling somebody else's stuff from a different state and you don't even touch it. And once you start touching it, how much better are you touching it than the guys who've been touching it for 50 years? Your advantage was you didn't touch it. But now you're going to say, we're moving into that area, and now we are. So we're going to build a fulfillment center, but there's, this guy's a smart guy, so I mean, don't get me wrong. His people say, well, we're going to make a fulfillment center, but guess what? It's going to be way better and put together than pretty much anybody's fulfillment center's ever been. But Kevin, I can show you a place on 115th Street where my old high school was. They built this place. You would have loved the joint, and I'm sure you've seen places like it. They built all the racks and everything before they put the skin on the building, because it was entirely automated, and this was 25 years ago, to where you just told the computer, go put that thing somewhere, and the computer put it, and you didn't even know where it put it. The computer knew, and the amount of space they saved and the amount of people they... But let's say Amazon did a better job than anybody up till then. There's still people there. You're still now, all of a sudden, instead of untouching the thing from North Dakota to my front door, you're touching it, and now you're delivering it. Now, how much better really are you at UPS that's been doing this for 50 years and is pretty damn good at it? Maybe if you're even 5% better, but the margins all of a sudden are starting to be different, right? It's sort of like...
I get that, Tom. What I'm saying, though, is that while UPS was and is good at it, and so is FedEx, that's the shipping part of it, but the warehousing part of it, actually, Amazon is kind of the model, both for automated warehousing, but also for, you know, kind of that low level retail warehousing, where it, you know, it's a lot different than some of these stores that have people out there picking in the aisles.
I don't disagree.
You know, retail warehousing is a totally different process, and nowadays, and it's totally database driven.
I know, but I'm saying other people were almost there on that stuff anyway, and you're still touching it. I mean, Benjamin Audrey's friend was working there for 6 months. You still got people still wondering if they're showing up. You're still people moving stuff around, driving forklifts. They still were doing all that. I mean, maybe, but my point is, every time you get on this road, it's like Amazon wanting to get in the car business. I mean, Apple wanting to get in the car business. And I sit there and go, wait a minute. These idiots got, not idiots, they're really good at what they do. Make a 75% return or something on a phone, and what does General Motors make on a car? 10? And you know, are they really? I mean, it's just different. You can't.
General Motors is making money on financing.
Well, okay, but I'm saying, you know what I'm saying is there's one thing about being in the grocery business. Your margins are like 2%, and they always have been, because that's how. I mean, you're buying a milk for $2 and you're selling it for $2.20. I mean, or you know, two. It's not like, you know, that the $5 or $6 or $10 it costs you charge the guy in North Dakota to have his fender listed on your thing, it costs you a tenth of a cent. I'm saying it's just different. When you enter all these other areas, you can't maintain. They're very costly to get in. You're competing with people that have infrastructure for 40 years, and the return is not the same. Doesn't mean it's not a good idea. Doesn't mean you're not going to be better than the other guy. I'm just saying that should the P.E. ratio be 1,000, or should it be like another retailer, 20 to 1 or 5? That's all. You know, that's my only point. Some place you go just...
Yeah, I think that's, I think that makes a lot of sense, Tom. It really does. But by the same token, a lot of this is driven by, just by share and the ability to continue to grow. And that's something where I would like to see, what the industry, what the analysts are saying about that. And I'm talking about the industry analysts, not the stock analysts.
Okay, I don't disagree. All I'm saying is if you're going to get down and dirty and compete with essentially Juul, well, Juul's already running a 2% margin. You're not going to get 50 out of that injury.
But Juul's not running a retail warehousing operation.
Okay, what I'm saying is...
Or hasn't been historically.
But I'm not saying that these guys won't be better and make a bunch of money at it. What I'm saying is you're not going to get... You're not going to have your stock priced.
Right. You're not going to get huge margins on it.
Right.
Because it's still the grocery industry.
That's right.
And I get that. But on the other hand, if they're going to be the equivalent of supermarkets putting ma and pop operations out of business, that's going to have a lot of value. So I'd like to see how that's going, and see what the competitors are doing. As an example, the biggest local grocery chain here is Martin's Supermarkets. Martin's sold. They sold the chain 6 months ago, I think they closed the deal. And I'm convinced, I haven't had anybody tell me this, but I'm convinced that the reason they did it was because they see the writing on the wall. They know they're not going to compete with people like that. They don't have the warehousing capabilities, but they did sell their business to Spartan Nash, which is based out of Grand Rapids, which does have a whole warehousing subsidiary so that they have the infrastructure to compete going forward. And so when I'm talking about, how the market's going to shake out, I'm not really talking about it from the profitability model point of view. I'm just saying, okay, how's the market going to shake out from a competitive standpoint?
Well, and I'm going to say that there's a million different competitive parts to that industry. I mean, you can go into there's a store in, a couple here in Chicago where they make everything you want pre-made, amazing amount of butcher spots, amazing amount of pre-made, whatever you want to call it, salads and all that kind of stuff. And that's where most of the money is. You go into Walmart, and they're roughly probably a little cheaper. They don't have any of that stuff. They don't have, good butchers in every store. They're not competing. I mean, where is the money in those places? The money is in the deli counter. In a lot of those places, it's in the homemade.
It is in a lot of those places, and in Walmart, the money is just in the full basket, and that's Walmart exists to save people $5-$10 on a basket of groceries, not for the shopping experience for sure.
No, and but I once in a while I go into Walmart, but usually I go to the Myers out by Audrey's because it's 6 in the morning and the only place open, and I'm going to say they're competitive. I just bought everything at Walmart. I mean, their sales stuff's actually better, but they're, not everything's on sale, obviously, but I mean, even like headlights last week, I went to Walmart and bought them because I know they had them. I bought these, high-end headlights for my truck. So I went to Myers the next day, they were $2 cheaper after making a special trip to Walmart. These guys are all pretty darn competitive. I mean, if you go online, the auto.
Yeah, and if I get some time today, I'll tweet out for listeners some of the because again, Meijer is a different warehousing model than most, and I can tweet out to people some of the videos of the they're real short, so things you can look at in a couple of minutes and see what the different how they approach it. But that whole process for them is now that's where the advantage is. Now, is that going to put them up to 30% margins in groceries? Of course not.
No.
Or in any of those goods. But is it the kind of thing that can position where those companies can duke it out with Amazon for a huge market share? And the answer is yes.
But a lot of it has to do with how many brands you're basically going to muscle out. Your selection, one man's opinion, your selection at a Walmart is less than it used to be at the IGA in my neighborhood growing up. Honestly. I mean, not in terms of, you know, huge amounts of stuff. But, I mean, if you walk down the aisle, if you walked into the owner of that place and you said, hey, how about Kevin and Chief's ketchup? We'll buy a case. We'll throw it on the shelf, see if it goes. Because if it does, well, we'll want it. Well, you're going to deliver them the case. They were going to put it on the shelf. Okay, you delivered stuff to the back room. And I worked at Hilo Foods. Everything was handled twice. You unloaded. There was some stuff you brought right out to the aisle. A lot of stuff you put in the back room, and then you brought it out as needed. You don't do that at Walmart. Walmart wants, that's why all these beers combine, Kevin. They want, if you and I are selling beer to Walmart, we're stacking the beer aisle. So if you and I have a Kevin and Chief's beer, we're not going to have, we can't possibly.
We'll go with Dan's beer. Well, I prefer Dan's beer.
Oh, Dan's beer is much better. Okay. What was it, Bomb Shelter? Good enough to be your last? I love the slogan. But he would have to actually go to every place, and he'd have to put, you know, two cases on the shelf in every aisle at every Walmart. Well, there's no way you compete doing that. That's why these guys they'll have to sell out, even if they don't sell the beer, they're going to have to sell out the distribution rights to the guy who's delivering the Budweiser, because he's going to put it on the shelf. So Walmart is,
So part of it is that they've implemented a just-in-time model, and the same kind of thing Toyota does with its parts, and they have the market power to do it.
But they don't own the stack boys. You do. You stack the beer aisle. You make it look nice. You stack
yeah,
the bread aisle.
Yep.
So actually, you end up with less competition, with probably less brands than you'd used to, and that's where the squeeze is.
Yeah,
in terms of your selection.
That's a bad example because there's more beers than you could ever imagine. And that includes on the shelves at Walmart.
Right, but I'm going to say that virtually all of them will come with two or three drivers. I mean, your Line and Kugels is going to be with the Miller guy because they've got
right,
the deal.
So who gets who eats the cost on that shipper?
Well,
the producer, because the producer's got to pay somebody to take it for him.
Well, the people here who owned Goose Island, popular beer. And they, the laws in Chicago make it so ridiculous anyway, but they open up their second saloon, for lack of a better term, up by Wrigley Field. They wouldn't let them put their cases of beer in the back of the Suburban and drive it to their other place. Because according to the Chicago and Illinois laws, you have to have a distributor. Because the distributor's been shoving money up there behind for how long? So they had to cut a deal with Budweiser to essentially drive their beer from one place to the other. And when they went in the food stores, they had the distributor the same thing. Finally, 2 years later, they said, screw it, and sold the whole operation out to Budweiser or Miller or whoever bought it. You know, all these combinations
I'm actually surprised that Uber hasn't set up distributorship rights.
Well, you know, it's
so
probably coming.
Controlled that they can't get them.
That you can't get them. So, I mean, all this stuff is always kind of in flux. And there's going to be somebody who has a grocery store that has a deli counter that's 100 yards long, they don't care about Walmart. I mean, you're in there to buy every kind of specialty food on earth, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, the nice thing about, I mean, I'm going to say out of all the businesses that I know, Kevin, I'm going to say retail grocery to this day remains competitive to a large extent. I mean,
I think it does, and it's interesting to also you can sort of slice and dice the market based on and even here where I live, it used to be Martin's and then maybe you'd get a Meijer or Walmart. Now it's you go from Aldi to Whole Foods and everything in between, and each one is carved out its little place as to why anybody would go to that store. And they all, you know, they all have a reason for a different reason for existence. It's actually very competitive, and it's real interesting to watch.
You know, it's been a huge inroad into that business and caused all kinds of changes. And I'm going to say it's not as recognized as maybe should be by anybody's listeners, even ours. Is the one of the biggest changes, Kevin, is all the fast pickup items that are now part of the gas station. Has changed from those places now in a city. You know, if you live in Lincoln Park and you're having a bunch of people over, and all of a sudden you say, "Whoops, I forgot to order the beer, or the soft drinks, or whatever." It's terrific to have somebody deliver them in 30 seconds or 30 minutes. I mean, we get that, right? But if you live in kind of where people still use their cars, which is in most places, right? If I go to the go get gas. I'm going to say Gas City. That guy lost all his place. The Speedway or whatever. Inside, I could pretty much do, 40% of my grocery shopping? I get all my beer, I get all my soft drinks, I get all my milk, all my cream, whipped cream, all that kind of good stuff in there, butter probably. They've taken a chunk out of the visits to the big store. For a long time, Jewel wasn't caring about, you know, Walmart coming in. They were caring about the guy down the block with the gas station all of a sudden selling milk. Because they want you in the store to buy milk.
Because even if you pay 50 cents more for the milk, you're already stopped at the gas station,
right,
and you're perfectly happy to do it rather than make a separate stop at Jewel.
Plus, if you went to Jewel just for milk, and you're not, this is not a sexist comment, but women are usually much better shoppers than guys in terms of,
You know what the literal translation of this is not a sexist comment.
It's going to be a sexist comment. That's usually
You brace yourself. Here's a sexist comment.
Well, what I mean, but this is marketing fact. Most guys, if you ship Mandy Weber or me up to the store and say, buy a gallon of milk, I'll take the over, and you buy something else while you're there. Women maybe not, because they the household budget, and they will go just for milk. Not everybody, but I'm saying there's no way I'm walking out with just milk. I'm going to see something on sale, and I'm going to grab it. I'm the biggest fish on earth, right? And maybe I'm using myself. But when you walk into a Jewel, you're going to have to go buy how much crap to get to the milk and then back on the way out. And you got this huge shopping cart, and I'm going to say in 90% of the instances, I'll take the over on just the milk, and I'm a winner. Just saying.
Yeah, I think you're right. The big seller is in those stores, don't you?
No.
Oh. Bananas.
Really?
Bananas. You can buy a banana for less than a buck.
Well,
it's like the perfect snack.
When someone's
to duck in there and grab a snack, you can just grab a banana.
Once in a while, I got to put a little bit of oil in the Suburban since the thing's 20 years old. And I buy a quart of oil at Meijer's, and it's $4.75. At the Meijer's gas thing out front, guess how much?
$6.50.
Ding, ding, ding. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's genius, though. I mean, how many people are going to sit there and go park again and walk into the back of the grocery store and save a buck?
Well, and probably have to wait in line to check out.
Yeah. But we're just being there. These guys are good.
So it's a very rational calculation that people make that say, you know, I can save a buck. I can save a buck and a half, whatever. Or I can save 50 cents on the gallon of milk, or I can just grab it while I'm here. They get that.
Our buddy Thomas.
But on the other hand, if you say I'm going to go to the store, let me see, I'm going to go to the store and shop for the next 4 days, then you're not going to go to Speedway.
Right. Well, our buddy Thomas is Maddie. Obviously knows his story, but his then girlfriend was a statistics major. Then she goes and gets a graduate degree. She lights it up on LinkedIn. Guess who comes to get her? Walmart. They want her watching films with people at certain racks and how many people put stuff in there. It's absolutely done to a T. It's scary business, but it's genius and it's interesting. SP futures up 250. NASDAQ futures up 1150. How people are manipulating us, Kevin? And are we too old to be manipulated? Probably not. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Mel Warman aboard. Kevin O'Neill with us. We're talking Amazon. We're talking stock prices. We're talking retail. But, hey, $1,600 a share, you better know what you're doing to be buying it. It's not like it's cheap. I've got Amazon trading right now down 110 at 1670. I saw it last night down 116. I think it finally dipped. I got it down 6.2%. Rumor has it traded down as much as 9%, but I did not see that. I saw it down 116 last night right after the numbers came out. Anyway, S&P futures up 275. NASDAQ futures up 1225. Dow futures down 2. The movers in the Dow, Boeing down $2. Not a lot, so not a whole lot going on in the Dow, so it's probably just a Boeing print. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 17.1%, FTSE down 33.5%, CAC around up 6, call that flat. So not much going on there. Nikkei up 49.2%, Shanghai up 14.5%, Hang Seng down 130.5%. Maddie, you know what we haven't mentioned all week?
What's that?
What have we talked about for the last year and a half that the POTUS has been tweeting on every single day, one way or the other?
Well, he tweets about China and,
we have
and
not,
the markets.
We've not mentioned China all week. There. One, going to be a meeting, not going to be a meeting. This is the first five-day stretch I can remember where the market has not been moved by China.
You did talk about the tariffs this week.
We were talking about the European tariffs.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, when's the last our guys are meeting their guys run up, and oh no, they're not meeting our guys run down. We haven't seen it in a week.
You're right.
This has got to be a new record. Actually, it's kind of nice, isn't it? 10-year, 1.76, been right there for a while. 1-0.38, it came back halfway towards zero from the -0.79 bottom, and now they've been stuck here. Japan -0.14. Which is right about halfway for them. They were -0.28 forever as well. Oil down at 11 cents, but right here, 56.12. Actually broke out of that stretch a little bit. We were 51 to 55 for a while. Now we bumped out of the top end of that range. I don't know if that's a trend or not, but XLE's back a little bit from where it was, reaching real lows too. And even some of the individual stocks, Schlumberger's back up to 35 from trading 31, so there's been a little bit of bounce in that area. Natural gas, 230. RBOB, 166. And we've got gold back over 1,500, 1,509. That's up 5.10. Silver up 34 cents. That's a big move. That's 18.15 for silver. Copper actually 267. So if you'd have bought it under 260, you're up a little bit in the copper. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start, as we typically are on a Friday morning. Light traffic coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Starting to build on the Eisenhower, but no accidents or issues to report. Stevenson looks good. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford look good. Same for the Tri-State. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Lakeshore Drive moving well in both directions. So no accidents on the screen at this hour. I, of course, will let you know if that should change. Weather today, that's unchanged. Exact same as yesterday. Partly cloudy skies, highs in the low 50s. Right now it's overcast and 46, going up to a high of 51. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 85 today. Right now it's clear and 67. In sports, the Blackhawks are sputtering into 2019 here, dropping another home game last night, this time to the Flyers, 4-1. Blackhawks were never in this one, and they're now in last place in the Western Conference standings in the early going. Coyotes were doubled up by the Islanders, 4-2. Both the Bulls and Suns were off last night. Of course, David Ross is expected to be announced as the next Cubs manager, and that press conference will be on Monday, so we'll stay tuned for that. And lastly, Thursday Night Football, it was the Vikings taking care of business against the Redskins, 19-9. Chief.
Kevin, whenever we talk about something like Amazon, and then we'll kind of wrap this up, but as an investor, you can't really divorce the investor piece when it's a company that's in front of you all day long. I mean, if you don't like what they're doing, you probably don't want to invest in them, okay? But the dynamic you see, the investing dynamic, is never just whether you like a place or not. I mean, that's, people will say, you know, even Warren Buffett's of the world, you know, geez, if you like Tide, you know, buy Tide. Well, you know, wait a minute. You can like a lot of things, and they could be priced too high, or you might not like something, and it's priced low enough to where it's a buy. So you got to kind of divorce a little bit if you're going to be successful investing. I mean, I love Matty Weber's tie he wore last time he had one, but it's not a $100 tie. I'll give him $30 for it, type of thing. So there's, you always got to be careful.
It's actually a $4 tie.
It could be a $4 tie, yeah.
Not a joke. I was in a meeting last week, and we discussed attire heading into the meeting, and we said suit, no tie, and so I didn't bring a tie. And then I got a text from my manager that said, by the way, we're wearing ties. And so I ran to the first clothing store I could find and bought a $4 tie.
Nice.
And there you go.
See, now, if you were in New York, Matty, all you do is walk out down the
and
block.
And nobody was appalled. Wasn't anybody appalled, was there?
No one could tell the difference. You know, you don't even really look. But I just didn't understand how we literally had the conversation 2 days before saying what we were going to wear, and then there was an audible called. And, of course, we were way overdressed, but that's fine.
My accountant, who's a character, nicest guy, he was going to some wedding or whatever, and he... One or two ladies there, let's just say he really wanted to impress. and maybe more, shall we say. He goes out and he buys, not only did he go out and buy it, but he was foolish enough to tell us. He goes out and buys a tie from like Brook Brothers or someplace. Guess how much he pays?
Oh, I don't know, $100.
$200.
Whoa.
$200. Yeah, well, that was only going to impress somebody if he left the price tag hanging on.
Well, so then he was absolutely convinced that this tie was going to, I'll use the term, get him some action. You could only imagine the grief he got when he came back from the wedding, shall we say, unfulfilled. it was dumb enough to tell us that. I'm saying the guy got, when are you wearing that tie again? Maybe second time's a charm. he could not live it down.
I really can't imagine spending any kind of significant money on a tie. But it's just not what people look at. Now, a suit I can get, sure. Shoes or, you know, accessories in that regard, a watch. I mean, that's not my thing, but some people are into that. But a tie?
Well, Manny, what happens is, I mean, if you fall for it, if you go, I don't even know if there's any, you know, good suit places around, or if it goes to a men's warehouse or someplace. Not saying they're bad. But in my day, when you went and bought a suit, especially if you went to a nice place, if you went to Fields or someplace, which I could never go because I needed an extra long and I never had it. But anyway, you go to a good place, and then while the tailors, you know, in those days taking it in, now letting it out, the guy says, let me put together a couple of whatever. Well, the suit could be $400. And when you come out, the guy's got four shirts there with real nice ties sitting on top of the match individual shirt. Well, that's going to be $600. I mean, so you got to say, no, I'm good. You
know? Right, which probably isn't easy to do.
Which isn't easy to do, because the guy, by the way, all the stuff he put together for the suit does look pretty good. But I'm not close. But I mean, so evidently this guy fell for that. And he goes, by the way, how much is that tie? And the guy's like, you know, $195. You know, all right, I'll take it. To this day, if you go out with him like twice in a month, somebody will mention the tie. Do you still have that tie? By the way, did it ever work?
Anyway. So, going back to the Walmart thing, Joe writes in on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter, Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. I didn't realize this, but he says, at Walmart, in many cases, Walmart doesn't own the merchandise until a customer buys it, which means the supplier takes shoplifting loss instead of Walmart.
Wouldn't be a bit surprised. I'm gonna guess that's the beer aisle, probably the bread aisle, the ones that they stack themselves.
Well, it's hard to shoplift beer, though.
Yeah.
Maybe one bottle.
Let's put this, it's hard for a customer to shoplift beer.
That's true.
That's a good point. Not that I've know anything about this, but you know, when I was 16 working in the grocery store, let's just say I noticed many many coworkers slipping out with a six pack.
Well, they used to dump the case in the dumpster.
Yeah.
Go back and get it at night when it was closed. But anyway, you look at a stack like this and you say, okay, should I use Walmart? Well, or Amazon? That's a story. But now you look at the stock price. Right now we've got it, you know, $16.73. Looks to me, now there's all kinds of things entering this picture, all right? You have to concern yourself with how people judge the company. Like for years, you look at eBay now, it's a staid little stock. And by the way, I had a position at the other day and the stock opened on $3 and I lost my 8 cents, unless it rallies back today. But now it's a staid retailer. It is priced like a retailer. It sticks there like a retailer. It wasn't always like that. eBay was on the cutting edge. And for years, if you tried to short eBay saying, when the thing first came out, it had to be, what, 25 years ago, Kevin? I went through the math, and at the price they were charging at the time, for them to, I'll use the term, grow into their stock price, I calculated like every man, woman, and child in the country had to do 3 transactions a day. Now here we are with Amazon sitting here at 1700. I'm not making a go short, go long, whatever. I'm just going through the math and how the math can change depending on how collectively people view the company. Right now, it's still considered an amazing growth company that's going to put everybody else out of business. Now, the stock is going to make, I'll be charitable, $25-$30 this year. Okay, if you wanted it to be 10 times earnings, that number should be $160, all right, not 20. And there would be some people that would say, if I'm going to spend $1,600 on something, they better be making $160. And by the way, sending me a check for maybe, you know, like 70 or something, like in a way of a dividend, like you're making money and returning money to me. Well, okay, that's not happening. So the question is, when, if ever, is it going to happen? And then comes the interest rate in there. 1981. the thing would never be priced here. Because I got to give this guy $1,700 in the hopes that 10 years from now he might flip me a bone and send me a $2 dividend and a or whatever. Now, granted, the stock price could go up. But that's also called the greater fool theory. That if it's not a good investment for me, somebody else will pay more. Now, if I could get 10% in a bank like I could in 1980, would I ever give this guy $1,700 in hopes of getting a check 10 years from now? Because that $1,700 10 years from now, 10% is going to be what? Double and a half? Would it risk-free? So there's a million different things that go into valuing a company. Now, right now, the minute you think that these guys have lost the cutting edge, that somehow or another, they're never going to make this $160 a share. They're never going to send me a dividend. It's not just a question of me waiting another few years, which maybe I'm willing to do, maybe I'm not. If it's never going to happen, you're going to sit there and go, let somebody else give you a $1,700, especially now if you're in the grocery business. And by the way, it looks to me like all these grocery guys are slugging it out and nobody's getting anywhere. So, I mean, what I'm saying, Kevin, all these variables come into play. But the hardest one, and the one that keeps me so anxious about loving the business, you never really know. You know what turned the 1 month to where finally collectively everybody said, eBay's not an inventor anymore. They're just a retail place. All of a sudden, the lady left. Meg Whitman. She left, and all of a sudden it's just, I mean, not that you can't do everything there you used to be able to do. For a while, the PayPal idea kept them vibrant, and then they sold PayPal. So virtually all your innovations are on the PayPal side now. So, I mean, it's, or they get rid of PayPal. I don't know if they sold it, but I think you got it as a shareholder. But the point being, people's perception of, it's like, was it NBC? When somebody invented the TV, NBC's stock that everybody's going to have a TV, look at the money we're going to make, of course, flew off. It went like a dot-bomb IPO used to. It flew up. And then all of a sudden, people actually got the TVs. You could sit there and say, okay, here's the advertisement. Here's how much they're going to make. How much they got to pay for a show. The stock didn't go past the original high for like 3 decades. Once you get to price something. So I'm worried about if I had a client who was in Amazon, my worry is one of these days everybody just goes, the guy's been inventing for 25 years. He's been moving from business to business. He's proven that he can disrupt businesses. He hasn't proven that he can actually make money during the disruption, right? I'd love to see him disrupt the prescription.
Well, I'd love to see their cash flow because they sink so much into infrastructure,
right.
and the infrastructure business itself. Actually, if I were to invest, I'd like to see him split in half and let me invest in the infrastructure business.
Well, by the way, funny you should mention $800 million.
That'll just continue to grow because we just continue to grow the amount of data we accumulate, going back to your statistics example.
But $800 million a quarter for this.
But the retailing now, I think, is not just that it's going to max out at something. It's also that it has stiffer competition than it used to.
Right.
The online retailing part of the business.
Well, you're not. If you go online, it's not at all obvious. Even though Amazon must do a pretty good job with Google, because they come up first all the time. But I'm saying that Walmart, Pep Boys, all these guys will get you stuff just as cheap.
Yeah, so Amazon's advantage becomes that it's the mall now.
Yeah.
Where you can just go and get everything done in one buy and one delivery. But that's not that's not how everybody shops.
Well, they're also geniuses.
People, and it certainly, I it would be foolish to just assume that I am normal, that
right.
For me to assume that I'm normal. But if I think of something I need, I may go look. I'll buy it, and then fine. And I have been known to, even with Amazon, to buy, make 3 separate buys in the same day.
Well, my significant other, and an awful lot of people like her, the genius in Amazon, the smartest thing this guy ever did, in my mind, other than maybe start the place, was this Amazon Prime. Because what do you want to get that stuff for? Well, I'm going to get it at Amazon. It's cheaper. Well, what if I showed you some other place that's cheaper? Well, it doesn't matter. I got Amazon Prime. So, in other words, you paid him $100, and you're bound and determined to make it worth it. Well, yeah. I wouldn't ask it that way, and I wouldn't get the question answered that way. But the point being is they've locked people in. with this Amazon Prime.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got someone like me who, you know, who the Prime has value, but because, you know, because my daughter uses the same subscription, she watches, you know, content all the time that comes with Prime. So that's what makes it worth it. I don't spend a lot of time, you know, viewing or listening to Amazon content, but she does.
But I will say this:
Streaming service. To Kevin's point, if you like the shows on there, and there's some really good stuff on there, and there's some free movies or included movies or whatever, that alone is worth the $100. If you take advantage of it, doesn't even factor in all the free shipping.
A whole lot of people don't, and that's why, as Tom said, part of the genius is that when you don't have people taking advantage of it. Of course, they probably make money on a per-view basis. I'd have to look into that, too. I haven't really paid much attention.
If they
make money from the publishers on a per-view basis, then they do want people to look at it. But otherwise, yeah, you're just paying to get the shipping. Well, you know, you have to buy a lot to make that work.
They had this miniseries on there that Audrey and Sarah were watching. It's this police show. It's essentially a policeman who, you know, he's getting divorced, and the guy who's been in the police chief is a crook, and or crooked, not a crook, like he's a second-store burglar, and he's running for mayor. But now, since it's cable, you get a little flash of booty once in a while, and everybody swears, you know, rather than regular TV. But I'm sitting there listening, and I still watch Chicago PD because our buddy the bartender at the Tripoli is still is a character on there once in a while. And so it's the exact same theme. I watched like three shows in a row. It was like I watched the last three shows of Chicago PD, throw a booty in there and throw some swear words. It's the same thing. It's the crooked commissioner running for mayor, and the police head of detectives knows that the guy's a crook and knows he'd be a horrible mayor. What does he do about it? It's like the same guy wrote it. And just threw in a little flesh and then a few colorful words. That I'm like, God, how could this not be perjury? Or the same guy wrote both shows. What? I never seen anything like it. Just saying. But,
But, you know, how much genuinely new stuff do you see on any TV show?
Well, the Honeymooners, after they made 35 shows, Jackie Gleason said, there's no more plots, we've done them all.
We've done them all. Let the Flintstones have it next.
Yeah, let the Flintstones have it next. So, Kevin, we got let's talk a little bit of sports, but one thing I did want to ask you, and kind of Manny and I were talking about on the way in. I mean, I've been talking about it with some of the guests, and obviously we've been talking a lot of politics, but even that seems to have died down this week, thank God. But I'm sure it'll kick right back up. Obviously, Elizabeth Warren is a huge story. Considering what her take on the society, yet I find in the Zuckerberg interview by the Congress people, do you notice, Kevin, that people say the Congress people, and everybody likes to talk about Maxine Waters and a couple of the other people that happen to be African American and maybe they don't sound as good as we'd like them to or something, but they're not dummies, and you get the feeling that the people, especially in the House, really are sort of local representatives in Washington, and their ability, not that I can understand it, their ability to understand just what a colossus that this Facebook has become. I know I don't get it. I have to keep asking you guys, and I'm not so sure you guys understand the whole part of it either. I don't know that anybody can even figure out what it's all doing and where it's doing it. I mean, it just seems like the subject is way bigger. It's like me being on a committee when I was on the committee for the SIBO about internet security, and I was the guy on the board who was on the committee, and there's five internet geniuses on there, system geniuses, and there's me. And I'm like, wait a minute. put that. All I did the entire meeting is put that in layman's terms. They were nice to me, and they explained it in a way where I actually learned a bunch of stuff. But, I mean, how do you expect this group to control this colossus that's blown up in the last 15 years? I mean, to me, it's like, you know, I don't know what it is. You know, Turtle's talking about racehorses or something. I'm not accusing anybody of being dumb. It's like putting me on the nuclear energy committee. I mean, how do I know anything about that stuff?
Well, I think with Facebook, first of all, I did tweet out, before the show, an example of what Lou was talking about was Representative Presley, and it makes no sense whatsoever. So, that's out there for Stocks and Jocks listeners to evaluate on their own merits. But it's a good example of what Lou mentioned yesterday. But as far as Facebook goes, first of all, Zuckerberg has gone from star to looking like an idiot often in front of Congress, and sometimes it's his own doing, and sometimes it's because he has people questioning him that want to make him look like an idiot. But they're in the big data business. I really think with Facebook, it started out as one thing when he figured out how to monetize all the data that they collect. That's another thing, but in the process, he opened Pandora's box, and I think the company has been they moved from scandal to scandal. The scandal being the information related. It's not necessarily scandal in the classic sense of the word, like someone did something bad. It's just revelations about their business model, and he's. He can't. I don't think they can keep up with it now. I think they opened this up, and now they can't control the monster they created.
Well, you also come to a definition, of what are you? When Matty Weber was not as mature and intelligent as he is now, he used to argue with me that Uber is not a cab company. I'm like, what are you? You're picking up somebody's ass in one corner and dropping it off on another.
I don't think I said it wasn't a cab company. I just said it was different.
Well, they had all kinds of people here. But sometimes you would agree with them. Not that I remember these things. When they said, "Oh no, it's a technology company. It has nothing to do with being a cab company." What are you talking about? You're picking somebody up and pointing.
Well, it's a cab company that found a way to use technology, right, and then a kind of a legal way to. A legal way to bypass some of the existing laws
and
costs associated with it. Okay, that's fine. In the case of Facebook, you do know how it got started?
Well, it was a competitor to what was the one before it.
No, what preceded it was, and you may recall this from our college days. We used to call it the dog book, but it was the book where you'd submit your profile before you came to school, and then all the freshmen there would be this book so that you could look up people and learn about some of the people who were in your class. And some people provided pictures, some people didn't. And it was what you're studying, those kinds of things.
What was the Facebook before Facebook?
And all Zuckerberg did in college was put that online. And then they started saying, well, we can have people chat back and forth with each other. Cool. And it grew out of that. So
okay.
there was an organic growth to it that made a lot of sense. But once, once he figured out how to monetize all the activity on there, all of a sudden you've gone from a platform for connecting people who otherwise wouldn't stay in touch to this big data monster that they now can't figure out how to control.
I would agree. Manny, what was the one that Herb and those guys were all on?
MySpace?
Yeah, MySpace. They're totally dead, I imagine.
Yes.
Well, Kevin, let's continue this next week. It's interesting stuff because you bring an interesting perspective because you know more about this than most people. But, I can't figure out now whether are they a newspaper? Are they advertising? I don't know what they are. Whose rules are supposed to have when they put ads up for people and everything? I don't even know what the newspaper's rules are.
They're a content publisher now, in that regard, and that's that. Were you talking with Lou about this yesterday?
Yeah,
standards as a content publisher.
Yeah, but I don't know what the rules are for a newspaper getting an ad. I know that it's free speech, but also know I can't be insulting people in the ad. They have some obligation to censor at least the N word out of there or something, or swear.
They should have standards. Is the Chicago Tribune going to take neo-Nazi ads?
I'm thinking no, but I don't know. I don't know who decides whether it is or it isn't.
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and that's a question that you debate.
Yeah,
and yeah, we can pick that up again.
All right, thanks, Kevin.
I think it's a worthy question. It's just where politicians come into play.
We got people pushing
the
envelope.
What do you encode into law versus what do you consider standard?
Right, and we have people pushing these envelopes, which most people find out that maybe they're not as knowledgeable as they thought. And we got a dash. SP Futures up 75 cents. Come back. We have Mr. Jim Higdon. This will be real interesting. Jim's been on before. He's a hemp entrepreneur, an author, former journalist. I don't think you can be a former journalist, man.
It's like always a journalist.
Yeah, it's like being a Marine or a trader. You can't ever be. But anyway, we'll talk to Jim when we come back.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, everyone. It's Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. He's Mr. Matt Weber. SP Futures up 50 cents. Not much. NASDAQ Futures up six and a quarter. Big news of the morning, obviously, is that Amazon's trading down $114 now. It's $16.66 as they came out with a miss on top line, bottom line, and they missed on guidance going forward. And they also said they spent $800 million a quarter, Matty, the last two quarters, and Jim, on on same-day delivery. This seems like a lot, $800 million a quarter. Jim, how are you? Welcome back.
Hey there, guys. How you doing?
All right. We're going to take offense to the former journalist. We don't think anybody could be a former journalist.
Oh, yeah, you can. All you do is just stop getting paid being a journalist, and then, boom, you're former.
Well, you can stop being paid, but I don't think you'd ever lose the curiosity.
Well, sure. I mean, I'm definitely still a book author. I mean, that sort of lasts forever. But the journalism thing, like, there's some things that come with it that, you know, I had to pretend like I was neutral and, you know, all that stuff. So I don't have to do that anymore.
No. But anyway, when you were a journalist, I used to love your stuff. And welcome back with the new stuff, the new Jim. I like that.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I used to cover, you know, well, I wrote this book called The Cornbread Mafia, which a lot of your listeners know about. That's the story of a superlative gang of outlaw cannabis growers from Kentucky, and then I parlayed that into a journalism career. I was a freelancer in Kentucky covering Kentucky for the Washington Post when news broke this way, and I was covering cannabis news for outlets like Politico magazine in Congress and in the states, and so I got a really good feel for the landscape of the political landscape of the cannabis space, and just found my opportunity to get involved on the business side last year and start the Cornbread Hemp Company, which is a CBD products company based in Kentucky.
Well, good for you. Did you ever see the I'll mention this for a second, because way more important things to talk to you about, that the history of essentially stock car racing and how it came.
Oh, sure. How it comes from prohibition bootlegging.
Yeah, and how it came from people in Kentucky and Tennessee being able to modify engines, and the various engines you could modify to like up the horsepower from what the factory had. Now, how those guys could outrun all the police.
Yeah,
I would never guess
Hudson
that.
The Hornet was the first vehicle, you know, low and fast, and
yeah.
they changed not just the engines, but the the tires and the suspensions on those things. Like when for a bootlegger driving a fast car, you had to have heavy suspension in the back so that you couldn't tell the trunk was weighted down.
Really?
Those sorts of modifications went into all that too.
Well, they talked about the Ford original, like, flathead V8 or something that somebody could put, like, double horsepower if you knew what you were doing. Right, it wouldn't be me, but anyway, how'd you end up in this business? They just had a big cannabis conference here in Chicago that our guys from Benzinga hosted, and Jim Belushi was one of the guys there. I guess he's growing hemp in California.
Well, that makes sense. I didn't know that, but sure.
Yeah,
I was just in Chicago myself for something with the Chicago Reader. Had an expo in Chicago at the I'm blanking on the neighborhood, Logan Square.
Okay.
The Emporium and the distillery there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That was a really good show. Met a lot of good people, and likely coming back. There's a the Reader's hosting another event in April with the Northeast Cannabis Conference that's starting in Boston, doing their first ever Chicago show in April. So I'll be back for that, if not before. So
Jim,
Chicago is setting itself up to be, you know, the Midwest center of legal cannabis.
I have a question for you. It's going to be a little off track, and I hope I don't hit you with something that you don't. A lot of people that have been involved in the business, this has to do more with my business than yours, in regulation versus laws, which always to me is about a cesspool.
Right, yeah.
An awful lot of people in your business that were original investors in these firms that now have stock that's trading every day, okay? You can pick the names of the places, Acreage and those kinds of, I'm sure you know all these names.
Mm-hmm.
But these stocks are all trading now on the NASDAQ. And they're, you know, and if you open up an account at PTI or any place, we can go buy 1,000 shares, assuming you send us some money, and you can trade them back and forth. But there's been a dramatic change in how, without telling anybody, that if you have the original paper certificates or stuff that is original stock, you can't get anybody to sell that anywhere. I mean, the regulators have come down on that, so virtually no firm, we know a couple places that maybe will still do it, will take, even if you, not even in the cannabis business, if Manny Weber goes and becomes a consultant for somebody and says, I'll get paid in stock, and they give you 5,000 shares of the place, try and sell it. the regulators have every single one of those people being assumed is a money launderer, and virtually every pink sheet stack now is considered to be something that's, you know, shouldn't be there without telling anybody. And all of a sudden the industry's made this move, and the cannabis people are caught right in the middle of this. I don't know if you know that or not.
Well, that's a little more sophisticated than I could speak to in terms of, you know, in terms of the stock trading. I definitely see a huge risk here in Kentucky with legal hemp businesses, federal legal hemp businesses, doing business with cannabis holding companies. There's just this, the industry seems to be, to some degree, the cannabis industry in America at the trading level seems to be built on toothpicks. And in America, as I understand it, fully legal cannabis companies don't have bankruptcy protection. And so that's going to be an issue when some of these companies start taking hits.
Well, you still can't have a bank account in a lot of places. You have to, banks will do it, but everybody who has their bank will never tell you who it is.
Well, we experienced banking problems on the hemp side in Kentucky. We finally found a bank that would do business with us, but at first, banks wanted to charge us, you know, $300 a month for money laundering monitoring fee.
Oh yeah. Well, they're doing it because
holding our money.
Yeah, they're doing it because people are making them do it. It's not like it's their idea.
Well, there's also some Patriot Act issues involving banker exposure to potential money laundering crimes. Bankers become personally liable because of Patriot Act stuff. And I don't know to what degree the Safe Banking Act working its way through Congress will address and fix that issue, but it feels like it will to a certain degree.
Jim, if you want to put your journalist hat on one more day before you burn it, I'd love to have you come in and we could dissect this Patriot Act and how exactly that thing has screwed this country up so bad. I don't know, I can't think of an act that screwed us up more than this act. I mean, in terms of looking up, what they've done is they've made bankers and even securities firms, we're the policemen now. The policemen don't do anything. If somebody gets somebody's password and stuff out of a local bank and it has all that stuff, and they wire transfer out of a place, they'll come find the bank, even though the bank didn't do it. There's virtually nobody you can call, FBI or whoever it is, that'll say they'll investigate. They don't care. The Patriot Act has pushed the entire police enforcement, down onto the victims.
Well, and you know, one can imagine the scenario where that made sense. And to solve the problem of dodgy bankers looking the other way when something was happening, especially in the wake of 9/11,
right,
when the Patriot Act gets pushed through, but the overall effect of that rule is much more burdensome than anyone ever anticipated.
Well, I mean, even in the I don't know if you know it or not, we're going off field here, but the problem with you is I can talk to you on any subject, so I tend to wander, and you wander away with me. I just spent 2 hours the other day. Here it is. How many? We're almost 20 years after 9/11. Not saying it couldn't happen again. State of Illinois, finally now, they've decided under federal mandate, they've got to change their driver's license into what, a Type A ID card or something.
And the real ID.
The real ID
here too.
Now, point me one spot where somebody with an Illinois driver's license currently got on a plane, it wasn't him, and he blew the plane up. I mean, I has there been one instance? I mean, after 20 years, wouldn't you say, are we going too far with this? And what are we doing?
It creates a two-document system in America. You got people who are going to have driver's license they can board a plane with, and people with driver's license they can't board a plane with.
Right.
It's essentially classist in its application.
But the whole concept of emburdening people that have, then there's no reason. I mean, some bureaucrat thought this up. God, if you don't have a passport photo, there's no way. But I think you and I without pitching one, and maybe Weber the same way, I'm going to say that the same person who can get a fake ID right now to get on a plane, if that's what he really wants to do, if you have those kinds of resources, you're going to end up with this new ID. It's not like you're going to stop those guys. You're just making it worse for everybody else. I mean, you honestly think that if you and I decided our life's work was to get in and put a bomb on a plane or do something, that somewhere along the line we couldn't get a real ID.
It seems like you're asking me to conspire to commit terrorism on the radio.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all found a way to get fake IDs in college, didn't we? I mean, come on.
I don't know that I want to admit to crimes to you on the radio. I don't know. It's just this thing I have.
I didn't say we does not include me and you. I knew guys. And guess what the hardest thing was, Manny? The hardest thing to fake.
What's that?
All the IDs. On your draft card, which of course you probably never even had one, on your draft card, on the back there was a stamp from your local draft thing. Duplicating the stamp was horrible. Because you could type the draft card, you just typed in the rest, right, Jimmy? But the stamp was very hard to duplicate.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely registered for the Selective Service. I don't recall having a draft card. I think it's before my time.
Yeah, you had to carry one when I was that age. It was with you. Anyway, tell us about the business. Tell us what you're having fun with. Are you doing the cannabis or are you doing the hemp or both?
So we're doing hemp-derived CBD. So in that sense, it's kind of both. The hemp that we're growing in Kentucky for CBD is unfertilized female flower, virtually unrecognizable from full-strength marijuana, except by a lab test. And Kentucky is a fantastic place, maybe the best place in the world to grow cannabis because of its agricultural climate combined with its geospatial location on the 37th parallel. If you trace the 37th parallel to the other side of the world, it crosses the Hindu Kush mountain range, and that's where indica strains of cannabis originated. And so that means that these plants really like the light cycles in Kentucky, and that combined with the agricultural base that makes our bourbon and our racehorses superior just really makes a fine product. And
you guys grow it outside then? So you grow it outside?
Yes, sir.
All the stuff, all the medical marijuana and all the recreational marijuana that's going to be in Illinois is all grown inside.
Right. You have to control for that and the varieties and the strengths, the potency you're growing for medical and rec is an indoor crop. Although what we're growing outdoors, if we were allowed to grow it for recreational, we could grow recreational outdoor, you know, with a high THC percentage, if the law would allow it. But indoor, we're probably moving into a world where indoor hemp cultivation in Kentucky is likely to be a thing soon. We're waiting on USDA regulations that are 2 months behind schedule, stuck in the White House.
Can you imagine that?
That should speak to whether, you know, we can, like, to what degree we can grow hemp flower directly for hemp flower sales, which is essentially indistinguishable from marijuana. The farm bill does not speak to whether or not we cannot do it. Kentucky and some of these early corporations that invested in the Kentucky hemp program want to disallow hemp flower sales direct to consumer, but we're very interested in finding a path forward on it.
Well, what would I do with a hemp flower, just for the ignorant?
Well, a hemp flower looks and smells like a marijuana bud.
Okay.
And you can grind it up and cook with it, or you can grind it up and smoke it.
All right, but there's no THC in there.
There's no THC, but some of these varieties have CBD levels above 15%, and a federally legal Delta 9 THC level, and then as much as 1% THC acid, which is the inactive form of THC, and so it's not nothing. People say the CBD doesn't get you high, but I don't really. I mean, it gets you something. You get a body glow, like a feeling below your eyes. It's not above your eyes.
But you, but some of that's some of that's topical too, right? I mean, if you've got
We on our website at cornbreadhemp.com, we sell the best CBD topicals on the market. We, full spectrum lotions that are paraben free, and I have a skin condition. Now, the FDA has not allowed us to make medical claims, so before we get into what my products do, I should say that the FDA has not evaluated these statements and that my products are not intended to cure, treat, or prevent any diseases.
However,
I have a skin condition, and the CBD lotion that we've made for skin conditions is something I use every day.
So, but is it, I mean, if you got a sore shoulder, there's some of that too, right? I mean, muscles.
Oh, yeah. Localized chronic pain.
Yeah.
We've got a 500 milligram lotion with menthol added to it that the menthol helps penetrate deeper into the tissue, and we've got customers that swear by it.
How, I use the term regulated, the medical stuff here, so happens I know a couple of people own these places, so as you, and you know by nature I ask questions, right? So, here I believe that you could walk into any one of these places, grab a little piece of either hooch or a candy bar and send it to the chemist, and he can trace it all the way back to the plant at the place and make sure that it was from an approved facility and all the other stuff. Is it that, I'll use the term, crazy in Kentucky?
Well, we're striving at our company to really sort of go above and beyond what the hemp regulations are. We're setting a new standard with our sort of, with our testing protocols to ensure safety, quality, potency. We've got QR codes, you know, the square UPC codes on all of our packaging.
Okay.
You can scan that with your phone, and it goes right to our lab reports, which is a great step in the right direction and is sort of the industry standard now, but we're about to implement two additional features that will make our quality controls the highest in the industry, and that includes certified USDA organic. And certified USDA organic will trace the hemp product like basically back to the square foot that it was grown outdoors.
Yeah, that's what I think. These guys are indoors, so yeah, the same.
Right.
And when it's all said and done, how can I ask this question without asking it? What drugs? Let's put it this way: what conditions do you think are going to be the most helped? I mean, I know on the medical side up here. I mean, Illinois was very, you know more about this than me, but I'm going to say Illinois was very slow under Governor Rauner to basically lob diseases on there, right? So a lot of it is epilepsy for community. I don't think he ever did general pain, and I don't think they ever did, like, Agent Orange and those kinds of things. I mean, he was pretty slow, wasn't he, in terms of what you could use it for?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's nothing worse than elected officials trying to determine what medical conditions qualify for treatment for a medicine. Like, no other medicine is treated that way. That's ludicrous. So to start, the idea that legislators or governors get to decide which people with which conditions have access to this stuff legally is just madness. But that's where we are. With CBD products, again, the FDA doesn't want me to say what people buy my products for, but a Consumer Reports study and a Gallup poll that both came out this year, April and July, both indicate that people are buying CBD for the top three reasons people are buying CBD are chronic pain, anxiety, and sleep. Now we can drill down on those some, but that's generally like the three biggest reasons why people are buying CBD.
But there's also obviously people undergoing chemotherapy. It's a plus. You know, there are specific, I'll use the term, conditions, like epilepsy being one of them, that it really does help. I mean, you can absolutely say, you know, this person had these many fits in the last 6 months, and now they're cut way down, correct?
So, like, 10% of CBD users are using CBD for severe issues, and, you know, we're calling that epilepsy cancer. You know, you could lump another couple of issues in there, but in terms of marketing, that's a no-go zone for companies like me. We cannot and do not market for epilepsy and cancer.
Okay. Well, I mean, you understand why some of these guys think that they should be sort of in charge, because obviously I'm going to say the greatest cure for a cold that doesn't work is alcohol. Right.
Right. Well, when alcohol was sold medicinally for the 13 years of prohibition.
Right. I'm just saying that alcohol is going to make you feel better when you're cold for a while. But I mean, you can't. Everybody who says they have a pain, you know, I guess the same thing as having a drink or smoking a joint. What's the difference? I suppose. But You're going to feel
well, better. Well, a significant difference biochemically. I mean,
right.
Drinking, well.
Well, you're better off
again,
to try.
I'm getting into medical claims here,
right.
But a significant difference in how the body responds to those two things is not just merely one intoxicant over another. The biochemistry of alcohol intoxication versus cannabis intoxication are night and day.
Right. Well, I get what I'm saying is at the end of the day, when this becomes, because I mean, I sort of know the history, you know it better, that wasn't there only one university for years and years was actually doing research?
Oh, Ole Miss.
Yeah, Ole Miss.
Terrible. Because
nobody wanted, I mean, I guess what I'm saying, at the end of the day, when the research is being done, and fast forward 25 years, I mean, we clearly like the tobacco plant, even if you hate smoking, the tobacco plant provides how many drugs? I mean, all kinds of them, right?
Well, and keep in mind, like, research has been, there's a dearth of research in the United States of America.
Yeah.
But that does not mean there has not been research conducted on this, like, at a high scientific level elsewhere in the world. The only way to think of a lack of research is if you only think that science happens in America.
Right.
Like,
well,
Israel leads the world in cannabis research and has for 30 years.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is your prediction is at the end of the day, how many, like maybe diseases we thought had like no chance that this is really going to help and could have happened 30 years ago if we'd never had our behind.
Oh. Yeah, my grandmother suffered from debilitating chronic arthritis in her hands. And
so
it makes
mine,
you wonder
yeah.
like
yeah.
how she could have, you know, like what her quality of life would have been like if she has these lotions that I make now.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that were like that. I know people that were, you know, worked with their hands all the time, and by the time they were 70, their knuckles are twice the size. I mean, yeah, they could have used it. You know,
right.
It's crazy.
I want to tell you all the things that I understand it to help with, but I'm being muzzled. My First Amendment rights are being impaired.
Okay, just nod your head on the air. It's got to help anybody from Vietnam with any exposure to Agent Orange. It's got to. Just nod your head, or don't say anything if you agree with me.
Sure, I'm going to do some card tricks on the radio and let you, like,
yeah.
You know, what card am I holding up?
But I mean, a lot of that stuff, I got to believe it helps dramatically. It has to.
Well, for folks who are skeptical, I'll invite them to go to our website and look at our customer reviews. We've only been shipping product for 6 months, and we've got nearly 150 five-star reviews on our website at cornbreadhemp.com.
Good for you.
So it's really something that we get feedback on literally every day from folks who were skeptical, who got it from, you know, and a lot of these are older, like this, well, let's say boomer generation folks whose adult children turn them onto it.
Yeah, I would open up a subject to, and I'm going to ask you to hang through the break. What
sure.
is one of the guys who actually lives in the same building as Maddie and I is a legislator assistant, and he claims that the Illinois law is about as bad a law as he's ever seen in terms of, you know, just how quickly it was written, how the desire was just to get, you know, 5,000 people sending $100,000 or whatever it is for an application and to just make money tomorrow. What we come back, can we talk a little bit about, I mean, what are some of the downsides, or I'll say unfunded things of the states that just said, okay, everybody can have as much as they want tomorrow? I mean, I've gambled my whole life. I love to gamble. I mean, obviously now I trade, but I used to like go to Vegas. I like going to horses. But when I see people, waitresses, walking out of restaurants making $100 and drop down at the video poker, walking out the door and lose 50 of it every day, and I see some of the issues that gambling has, but the state has never addressed whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a downside to everything. And I guess the question is, how big has the downside been in Colorado and Washington, if at all? Has it been quantified, or nobody cares, or they look the other way? I mean, the vision of having, you know, 20,000 people walking out of a recreational marijuana place and running into Wrigley Field with 15 brownies apiece, when we have no way to check whether people are driving under the influence or anything else, I'm not so sure I want that happening tomorrow, even though I absolutely agree with you that it's an industry that its time has come. But is there an adult in the room on this as we move forward, or are we going to do like we always do and just, we say, you can chew on that one during the break. SP futures now down a quarter, and NASDAQ futures now up 350. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds?
Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right
now. Right here. Right now. Right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Howe, Mr. Mitt Weber, and aboard Mr. Jim Higdon. CornbreadHemp.com is with us as well. And he's been on the show a bunch of other times. We didn't even get to the fact that the guy's a genius. The guy, Jim, is a genius on state financing and everything else. So we didn't even talk about that. Let him back for that because this is kind of a hemp day because he's in that business now. NASDAQ futures down 475. Like I said, S&P futures down 250. We've ducked under here. Dow futures down 24 over in here. Again, the big news of the morning is Amazon. Where do I have it now? Down 112.49, trading 16.68. So if they came out with earnings and missed top line, bottom line, and they cut their yearly number like 60 or 80 cents. So, I mean, it was a big cut. They claim they've spent $800 million in each of the last two quarters on their same-day delivery system. And I think just about everywhere, everybody goes, that's kind of a lot. And I think has sold the stock off because of it. DAX down 19, now it's 0.1%. FTSE down 39.5. Kekaron up 8.1%, so they're kind of not doing much over there. Nikkei up 49.2%. Shanghai up 14.5. Hang Seng down 130.5. We've got bonds. 1.75 is the rate, not much change there. 1 minus 0.38, Japan minus 0.14. Again, those are in the minus column. Oil, kind of the top end here, 56.16. It's down 7 cents, but it had a pretty good rally yesterday. Brent down 2 cents at 61.65. Natural gas, 229. RBOB, 166. And finally, the gas prices in Illinois are coming down after the Arab attack, 6 weeks ago, maybe? They've been keeping them up there for, 6 weeks? You gotta hand it to those guys.
That's right.
Gold up 950, 1514, so blasted back over 1500, pretty good here. Silver up, I don't think I've seen a move in silver like this in a while. 47 cents, 1827. Copper going nowhere, platinum going nowhere. Matty, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues to report on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like the Reagan Memorial I-88 inbound just before Eola Road out near Naperville. There's a crash that's causing congestion coming in on I-88, so keep that in mind. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy, though traffic's starting to build. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good at this hour. Only other issues in the area, northern suburbs, Gilmer Road at Route 83, there is a crash. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds early. Could see some sunshine later on, similar to yesterday, a high of just 51 degrees. Right now it's overcast and 47 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 85 today. Right now it's clear and 68. In sports, Blackhawks were blown out at home by the Flyers last night, 4-1. Coyotes were doubled up by the Islanders, 4-2. David Ross will officially be announced as Cubs manager on Monday afternoon. And lastly, Thursday night football, it was the Vikings over the Redskins, 19-9. Chief.
Jim, I'm going to set the tone. I was asking about kind of the downside to this. It has nothing to do, by the way, you will not find anybody who agrees with you more about the positive effects of what you guys are doing. Yet, unfortunately, no man can do just one thing. It's nice to have the state of Illinois, get 500 idiots to send them an application at $50,000 a pop, knowing that only 10 of them that are probably already chosen are going to get the places. just saying how Illinois works. That's nice, but if it's 50,000 emergency room visits to county hospital that they now can't pay for, I don't know if that's an even trade.
Falling into this reefer madness notion that the emergency rooms are going to be filled with people overdosing on the marijuana is just, hand-wringing at a high level. You see it a little bit, you saw it a little bit. A statistical uptick in ER visits in Denver, in other states as they go online legal. And almost all those cases are people, usually first timers, overdoing it on edibles. They think, right. Oh, I don't want to smoke it. I'm a first timer. This chocolate bar looks good. They eat one serving of the chocolate bar. They wait around a half an hour. They say, well, that didn't do anything. They eat a second serving of the chocolate bar. They say, well, that didn't do anything. They eat the whole serving. It's meant for four adult humans. And then they've overdone it, and 2 hours into it, all of a sudden they have a panic attack. And, they go to the hospital, but it's not like they get admitted to the hospital and end up with a lobotomy.
Right.
They get calmed down and sent home. What's amazing is that the treatment, I believe, that hospitals are now giving to people who overdo it on THC is CBD, the other component in the cannabis plant. The cannabis plant essentially produces its own antidote to overdoing the THC. If you bring it down by balancing it with CBD, those high level effects wear off.
Well, I'm gonna lab. It's been a theme for a while, especially among old people like me. We seem to have, again, I'm gonna lob this out there. We don't have to comment on it, but we are in this world now where we've lost the differentiation between immoral and illegal in a lot of ways, I think. I mean, and a lot of people who are on the show sort of agree with that, but the idea that in some people's minds, again, I'm starting this by saying I'm with your business 100%, in some people's minds, because it's now, quote, no longer even a misdemeanor, it's got to be okay in all circumstances, that we have people in this world, in this country, who feel that way. And I will say that in the last 4 months, and I just trying to be an observant dude, and I usually drive with my car window open, I'm going to say that in innumerable times in the last 3 or 4 weeks, the belch of marijuana smoke from the guy in the car next to me has been dramatic. And I'm reasonably comfortable that most people don't drive around with a beer in their hand, because we've got a way to police that, and we've got laws about it. I actually drove through Hubbard's Cave last week, Maddie, on a Saturday afternoon. The entire, it's that tunnel where Kennedy goes on. I'm sure you know where that is, Jimmy. It's the entire cave smelled like marijuana. I mean, at some point here, I can't say
what,
that
what,
I feel.
What you're doing is you're making a one-to-one comparison that alcohol intoxication and marijuana intoxication are identical as it relates to driving.
Oh, I'm not doing that at all. I'm just saying the way the driving is in this city anyway, with no policing whatsoever and people driving 85, 90 miles an hour where they should have, I'd rather not have them smoke a J while they're doing that. I mean,
the latest study I saw, which parallels my anecdotal experience, is that people who smoke marijuana drive slower.
They're more
aware of their intoxication, and they compensate with safer driving,
Jimmy,
as opposed to alcohol intoxication, where people are less aware of their intoxication and engage in more risky behavior.
Okay, I'm going to say I would do that. I'm going to say you would do that. Maddie would do that. What I'm saying is, there is a group that now thinks this is wide open, I'm just saying whatever you do, there's a downside to it, and I agree with you. I'm not that worried about the emergency room visits. I think that the good outweighs the bad. I honestly do. But to ignore that there is going to be some bad, I mean, do
well,
we...
Well, and then yeah. while we're doing a cost-benefit or a SWOT analysis on the upsides and downsides, let's make sure that we keep in mind the downsides that Illinois is cycling out relative to over-enforcement of BS laws regarding simple possession.
Well,
and what that's done to our court systems and our criminal justice system.
So I'd like to ask Jim, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, Manny.
So Illinois, as you mentioned, becoming fully legal come first of the year. I know Kentucky is not fully legal. You're legal in some ways and not in others. I don't know if it's just medical or what, but
it's just hemp right now. But go ahead.
Okay, so you haven't necessarily experienced it directly in your state, but I know you're very familiar. What do Illinois residents have coming? I mean, what to expect as far as the rollout and the boom to the economy or lack thereof? Or I mean, it's legal in Michigan and that's kind of close to Chicago, but it's not that close. There's not a lot of competition right now right around Chicago. I mean, what do we have to expect?
I mean, you have to expect lots of people from Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee coming up to buy an ounce and drive it home. You've got, you're gonna end up at the end of the calendar year 2020 with some pool of tax resources that you didn't have before. You're gonna have lawmakers fighting over how to spend that money.
Jim, how much is the? Back up a second on that. The medical stuff, and I know this because I know people in the is only taxed 6%. It's taxed as a as a medicine now. I think one of the initial booms of the new ones is going to be the application fees to get the dispensary. After that, what are the taxes on the recreational side?
I don't know that up for Illinois off the top of my head.
Well, but what are they in Colorado?
The model is higher for other states. Essentially, what it boils down to is, I mean, the medical and recreational are how it's sort of conceived, but in practice, what we're talking about is residential versus non-residential purchases. So medical is always restricted to residents of the state, and recreational is for people coming in from out of state.
Yeah, because right now, so, I would say the state makes nothing virtually on the medical.
Well, and I don't know. I've not seen Illinois' numbers. I know that other states make good money on the medical, but they're not taxing it necessarily at point of sale to the recipient, but there are taxes and fees along the way from on the wholesale.
I think
side.
I think there's maybe 10% on the grow, but it's not, you know, it's not like it's 50 or anything. It's not, you know, it's not.
Well, you don't want it. You don't want it so high that it keeps people in the black market. You want the taxation at a right level where the price of the unit is what the consumer wants it at, so that they're not diverting it into the black market.
That's a danger, I think, because I bet they go overboard on the taxes here.
Well, I mean, you know, it's, you know, if Massachusetts can figure it out on taxes, I have some degree of confidence that Illinois can.
I don't know if I'd put Illinois ahead of anybody. But, you know, I guess my concern always is, I mean, I watched people grilling Zuckerberg yesterday, is I can talk to you, and you know this crap. But the people voting on these bills, do they have any idea, do they have any of the depth of knowledge? I mean, you can sit there and you can probably say, here's been the example in Colorado, and by the way, the medical stuff has gone up, you know, 0.1% because of this, but, you know, it's not like it's up 10% like somebody might have thought or whatever. But did any of the people voting on this stuff, do they send somebody out there? Is there actually a book of knowledge on this other than the fact that you, because you were a former journalist, you just want to know and happen to know? Do the people vote on it, do they even care? I mean, I don't think they care to the
gamblers. Well, yeah, I mean, look, everyone's responsible to their constituencies. I know in Kentucky, there's a nonprofit group just brought in for their annual healthcare policy summit. The man who was the first regulator for Colorado to show how Colorado implemented their legal scheme. And there's certainly people in the policy space, the healthcare policy space, looking at best practices, understanding that this is not an if but a when, and not a whether but a how we should, and going towards looking at best practices instead of, you know, just siding with one or the other, because the anti-crowd in this remains these reefer madness types who run nonprofits who don't disclose who their donor bases are, and it's difficult to trust those people. And the other people arguing against it are law enforcement, and law enforcement is just, you know, law enforcement appears to be the group of people addicted to marijuana, not anyone using it.
Well, I mean, you're right. I'm not equating the two metabolically or anything like that. But over a period of time, you know, we have some rules regarding alcohol, whether they're broken or not. I will absolutely say, even if, you know, you might, that in the last, since Illinois has done with the misdemeanor part, the incredible increase, I mean, I don't know, maybe you don't see it, of me walking out of my building here and see four people walking along smoking a J. I don't usually see people walking down the street sucking on a beer. I mean, we don't seem to have the rule infrastructure.
Well, so first of all, like when you smell that on the street coming from pedestrians, that is the smell of freedom.
I agree.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean,
so,
I
completely agree.
I don't. I mean, I guess the I'm just.
And it smells better than cigarettes.
Nobody, I don't think anybody had a group of people in college they hung around with that smoked more dope than mine did. You know what? I always drove. I didn't ride with one of those guys. They never wanted to drive. You're right. They might have been too cooled out to, but I didn't trust one of those guys to hop in anymore than I did a guy who was drinking. I mean, I'm just saying, in my mind, I think the state of Illinois, because they got tax dollars in their mind, put this bill a little bit too. I'll bet if you read it.
I don't think it's just tax dollars. I think the city of Illinois, the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois, has a very good understanding of the damages caused by alcohol prohibition and what
right.
and what gangsterism caused prohibition in Chicago through the 13 years of alcohol prohibition. And they look at what's going on in Chicago relative to marijuana on the streets and
right.
see a direct correlation between the gangsterism of the 20s and 30s and the violence today, and that legalization is the answer.
I don't disagree.
I mean, has Colorado seen an influx of traffic related issues since this has become legal? Or
there is so statistical relevance uptick is the question. There's a general uptick in traffic unsafety, but not just in states that's legal, but sort of across the board. And it could be legal marijuana that's causing that uptick, or distracted driving and smartphone apps. There's not a lot of statistical relevance to determine what's causing or what might have caused an uptick. You know, there's not an accurate drug test that determines THC intoxication, because THC exists in the body long after it's intoxicating. So finding relevant metrics to determine the safety of this of marijuana driving remains elusive. But you know, from my skeptical point of view, if you're having trouble finding it even now, there's a good chance that it just doesn't exist.
I would agree, and I think smartphones are 100 times more problematic for drivers than marijuana.
Oh,
so hold on, Chief. So just to shift gears, because we only have a couple minutes left, there's always been a, since this has become legal in certain states, but you know, for a time, you know, illegal in other states and still illegal in other states.
I'd say it was life imprisonment in Texas for a while.
Well, yeah, it's still fully illegal in many, you know, right wing states for the most part. You know, your site, cornbreadhemp.com, you're selling and shipping, products, with CBD oil in them. From a merchant services perspective and shipping perspective, what kind of issues do you face on that, if any?
So the terms of services for companies that would service a regular e-commerce business like mine are drastically behind federal law in a variety of crazy ways, and every day is another indignity that we have to suffer because Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Google, Amazon, FedEx doesn't realize that hemp is legal now. It's we've solved some of these problems. I've served the merchant processor problem. UPS will do what FedEx won't, which is send a package in the mail. The U.S. Postal Service is fantastic, but FedEx won't send a hemp package in the mail. You can't sell a product on Amazon that says CBD on it, but you can sell a product on Amazon that says hemp.
Jim, when you say legal now, by the way, I hope you're right on this. Is hemp, if you have a hemp farm and do all hemp stuff, does the bank welcome you? Do you have the all clear on the federal level? And do people think you do?
So I've got a bank for deposits, but finding a line of credit remains a challenge because a bank won't take hemp inventory as collateral.
Right. Well, yeah, I would guess so.
So banks in Kentucky are doing some business in hemp, but only with existing clients that they already have relationships with. A new business coming in off the street saying I'm a hemp business and I need a loan, no chance.
But I mean, I'll do a really dumb question. Could you walk into the head of Federal Reserve, Mr. Powell, and say, hey, tell the banks to lay off. Here's the law. There really isn't an all clear law on the federal level yet. That's what you're hoping for in this new agriculture bill, correct?
Well, this new Safe Banking Act. So, okay. The issues remain with banking and hemp. Relative to, as we discussed, the Patriot Act stuff.
Right.
A Republican congressman tried to fix that with a standalone bill, and the Democrats in the House said you're not fixing hemp banking without fixing cannabis banking altogether. So they passed what is the Safe Banking Act out of the House. It's gone to the Senate. McConnell has signaled that he will wet that to a floor vote by the end of this calendar year. McConnell just went to California and sat down in a meeting with people in the marijuana industry in California to talk about banking. Like, there's, you know, lots of sort of nonverbal signals that this will move forward. Cory Gardner, the Republican senator in Colorado, is facing a tough reelection, and he needs a bill like this to take home next year to say that he's getting stuff done in the Senate for Colorado. So I think there's 9 Republican senators up for reelection next year that represent a medical marijuana state.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a lot of signals that would indicate that this banking bill is going to pass out of the Senate, and that will be the first standalone pro-cannabis bill that passes out of Congress ever.
So no more hauling a suitcase full of cash to the state to pay your tax.
Correct.
So why wouldn't a bank, you know, just a local bank, be willing or see the competitive advantage by being a little bit more progressive on this issue and doing business with, you know, how could you not see the big picture, I guess, is my question from a banking perspective.
Because when you got a regulator, speaking from my industry, you got a regulator looking hard at this, that's way worse than a law prohibiting it. Am I right, Jim?
Well, I've been told by an independent banker directly that Patriot Act exposes him to a 5-year minimum sentence and $250,000 fine if something goes wrong and he's the banker on it.
Oh, there you go.
Man, this stuff has been pushed down the chain. These kinds of rules...
It's insane.
It's insane. Absolutely insane. And if your job is to protect, I'll use, for instance, Lakeside Bank, Burling Bank here in we're in the block of the office here. If your job is that compliance guy and they say, what do you think? You're going to say, we don't need that account that bad. Right, Jim?
Right. I mean, any corporation with a compliance office and a legal team across the board are slow to the uptake on this stuff. And just, you know, like small businesses are quicker, medium-sized businesses are slightly slower but still coming online, but big box retailers, large hotel chains, anybody with compliance officers, they just, all they see is the risk.
And what, you know, what's the benefit to, I mean, to Federal Express? I mean, it's what percentage of their business, and if something goes wrong, it's what percentage of their headache.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's just crazy and sanctimonious,
yeah, sure,
and hypocritical.
Sure is.
I mean, FedEx is potentially the world's biggest drug dealer to start with, right?
Yeah.
All this marijuana that's getting diverted from California and Colorado into the black market, it's not ended up in the eastern United States on Camelback. It's flying on a 747.
Well, Jimmy, how do you think we feel when we've got people trading marijuana stocks and somebody gives us a certificate and we got to put a block on it? And what's the sense of that? Why is it? You know, that's crazy.
So,
the stock trading of, you know, non-federally legal companies is just a sort of a murky business to begin with. What do you do, that OTC?
No, I'm saying
that's going on.
I'm talking about these are
NASDAQ
stocks
or Canada.
No. I maybe didn't explain it. There are some that are pink sheets that are still some little companies. I'm not going to accuse you of being that, but some of them trade $250,000 shares a day and are trading $20. So if you open up an account at PTI, you can buy 1,000 shares tomorrow. But if you walk in with a certificate, nobody will take the certificate because they thought you're a crook because you got in early.
Well, I mean, every industry starts off early with crooks.
Yeah,
you're in early. That's what they do.
So we only have a minute left, so I just wanted to, I guess, close with this, Chief.
Yeah, please, Manny. Go ahead.
With Illinois, you know, sort of beating, you know, Wisconsin and Indiana and Kentucky and Missouri and Iowa and Minnesota and the rest of the Midwest to the punch, you know, outside of Michigan, which is a little bit far away. What's your prediction? Is this a home run win for Illinois like it was for Colorado, or are they too late, or is it not going to move the needle? What do you think, Jim?
I mean, Illinois changes the game because it's this Midwestern beacon with a bunch of surrounding states. Like, other states who want to keep their head in the sand can't any longer. Illinois, down at the bottom, you know, is a border state with Kentucky. So, you know, Illinois is a 2.5-hour drive for me. Before, Kentucky legislators pretended like this was just an issue that was a Western Mountain California problem. But now it's a border state problem for Kentucky, and that's a big deal. And the impact for change is significant.
I would agree with that. I mean, Jimmy, promo your site and your product, please.
Oh, yeah. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Cornbread Hemp. I'm on Twitter at Jim Hickton. Check out the website at cornbreadhemp.com. And, you know, use a promo code CB15 for 15% off your first order at cornbreadhemp.com.
Before you put your journalistic background so far in the back, on the back burner, can you come back on and talk about some financing in the state here one of these days?
You know, I don't think anybody wants me talking about financing, but I'm happy to come back and talk about cannabis and hemp anytime you need me.
All right, well, I got to steal you for a little bit of the other stuff because we're broke, and you know more about it than anybody else. Take care, buddy. We will have you back for both subjects if you don't mind. Thank you very much. Thank you, Maddie,
really
by the way.
Thanks a lot.
Proving one more time that Maddie's a better host than me. S&P futures down 1.5. Be back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.